My pappy said, son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
It's supposed to be the greatest weekend in motorsports. F1's Grand Prix of Monaco, the Indy 500, the Coke 600, and there's a lot of snoozing going on. We also are going to talk about a strange streak that Kevin Harvick broke this weekend, and we're going to update the halfway point of the regular season. That's all this week here on 5 to Go.
They arrested me and they put me in jail and they called my pappy to throw my bail. And he said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Good day, everybody. Hope you had a very reflective Memorial Day. So come out of that holiday here and begin the summer season, although summer doesn't begin until the end of June. I'm Doug Fireball Turnbull, and welcome here to the 5 to Go Racing Podcast, where we discuss mainly NASCAR, but we also talk about other motorsports. We talk about other issues in the world, how they intersect motorsports, and we go deep on five issues each week. Sometimes we do more, and we try not to just do race recaps. We try to take a different zig or zag from what a normal racing talk show or podcast is. So, like I said, I'm Doug Fireball Turnbull, Eric Von Hessler, the daily host here in Atlanta, Georgia, of the Von Hessler Doctrine on WSB Radio and the WSB Radio app, iTunes, all of that. He is on vacation this week, but Dan Elliott never takes vacation, and he is with us right here, the awesome mechanic from Dawsonville. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing wonderful, man.
Hope everybody had an awesome and safe weekend, and going to miss the Dr. Eric Von Hessler this morning, but we'll try to carry on without him.
Yeah, Eric, we're really close. Eric and I were really close, and you during this hour, but I didn't even know he was on vacation until I saw an email from management talking to who was filling in for his talk shows, and I said, oh, okay, well, guess Dan and I are standing on two legs today. So, no, but it's good, Dan, and Eric had to miss last week for some different scheduling commitments, but should be back very soon. There's no monkey business going on, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Dano, you and I talked a little bit via text message and phone. After Sunday's triple header, you had F1 early in the morning, about 9. Actually, not that early for an F1 race. Those usually start really early. This time it was at 9 a.m. They ran the Grand Prix of Monaco. That is their big race of the season. Certainly the setting and the tight corners. It's one of the most celebrated courses, and it was led from the pole every single lap, and the guy that led all the practices won the race, Daniel Ricciardo, which is a very popular win, very popular win. Then you go to the Indy 500. They had a different package, low downforce, very hard to pass. The leaders usually got out front and stayed out front. Ed Carpenter, Tony Kanaan, among those that led a lot of laps. In the end, you did get a first-time winner in the 500, the previous series champion and race winner, Will Power. But there was not a lot of – until the very end of the race when people really ramped things up, there was not a lot of passing and long green flag runs. And then you get to NASCAR. Kyle Busch, Dan – wins stage 1, 2, the extra stage, stage 3, stage 4 he wins. That's the final one. He leads, 377 laps to win the Coke 600, very similar to what Truex did 2 years ago. Dano, the greatest weekend in motorsports, one of the biggest spectacles in motorsports. What taste was left in your mouth after dominating performances in two of them and one that it was hard to pass in?
You know, I watched the Indy race first, and I really think that I really thought through the whole race that it was going to be a setup at the end where that we would see a bid for the lead by 3, 4, 5 cars maybe, and the setup was there. It just didn't materialize, and got to congratulate Will Power because he was not the dominant car, didn't seem to be the one that I would have picked to have been there at the end, but with the fuel mileage and attrition and the wrecks, obviously, and it was his race.
It certainly was. Ed Carpenter and Tony Kanaan seemed to really be the drivers that had it figured out front, and there were some others. What was interesting was at the end, when all the chips were on the table, people suddenly started racing hard, and the real problem was that these cars were so on edge they were very hard to control. They really were. There were so many single car spinouts. Took Kanaan wrecked. Elio Castroneves. Danica Patrick in her final racing start. She wrecked about lap 70 or so. And there was just no give. There was no saving a race car. Once it stepped out, it was out. And so I think drivers, with the exception of Alexander Rossi, who started in 32nd and drove pretty much all the way to the front, took all race to do it, people just chilled out on green flag runs. They knew if they pushed it too hard, they wouldn't be able to pass and they would wreck out. Was that what you observed also?
Yeah, it really was. It was definitely a different day all across the spectrum in the sports world, the motorsports world, to me. And it was, you know, I was kind of excited that the end of the race, I really thought would be one that I'd kind of be on the edge of my seat to see who could muscle their way to the front, because we saw some interesting racing during the event, to where that there were a few cars that could pace where no others could, and seemed to have a definite edge. But when it came down to the end, Willpower just drove away, and it was kind of disappointing the way it ended.
Although I will say, in the laps before it, it was but 5-7 laps to go. You had Oral Servia up front, followed by Stefan Wilson and Jack Harvey. Drivers that you were not expecting to have any kind of shot. And Servia immediately lost the lead on the restart. And suddenly, you see the late IndyCar driver, Justin Wilson's brother, Stefan Wilson, up there leading the Indy 500, a guy who I've just read about. I didn't follow this story, but I guess he had to give up his ride last year to Fernando Alonso when Alonso came over from F1 to run the Indy 500, and Stefan Wilson was milking fuel mileage. It looked like he was maybe in a shot to win the thing, and then they literally pulled into pit road right as the race went green or after the first lap, and that handed the lead to Willpower, and just nobody came out of charge. Let's juxtapose, Dan, what we saw in this Indy 500 with what we've seen in past years, which has been a package that really really promoted the slingshot pass. It seemed like there was almost too many lead changes. It was almost too many. It was too random in years past, maybe. Did you think about those other races and what you've seen in the last 5 years or so?
Yeah, I kind of was kind of excited about it. And, you know, and to see it end the way it did, it was sort of kind of a letdown. But good race, and not going to throw off on the packages or the winner or anything like that. The only thing that I can honestly say about the event is, you read the internet or pick up the paper, and there's a picture of Danica wrecked, and then Willpower wins the race, and kind of throws me back to 83 when we won the first race at Riverside, and it was the last race of the season. Bobby Allison won the championship, and that overshadows anything that you do on a given day. And I hated to see Danica wreck. I did. But leading up to that, leading up to the Indy race, that was what I saw a lot of, was coverage of her. And then after the event was the same thing, okay? And now we're going to get to see whatever endeavors she's in, clothing and announcing and other things. And
lifestyle, looks, like, and things like that.
That seems like that'll go on, like we've said about this before. It's the lifestyles of the rich and famous are the rock star status, whatever it is.
Well, and we cannot ignore, though, Danica Patrick's presence in motorsports, and particularly in Indy racing, where she's had some success. And so, Dan, you and I were talking about women that have run in the Indy 500, and she is the most successful that has done that. I'm looking at Janet Guthrie. Her best career finish was 9th in the Indy 500. She did run in the Indy 500. She was the first one to do that. Let's see. How many times did it say? She had only 3 starts in that race. Danica Patrick, meanwhile, had 8 career starts in the Indy 500, best career finish of 3rd in 2009, her last year before she started dabbling in NASCAR. She's led 29 laps in that race, and she did it from a young age. Her first start was in 2005. Some other women, Dan, who have run that race, by the way, Desiree Wilson. Actually, she failed to qualify, but she passed the test in 1982. You and I have both met Lynn St. James before. She raced in 7 Indy 500s and actually got finished as high as 11th in 1992. Sarah Fisher, she's actually had the fastest 4-lap average and fastest single 1-lap qualifying speed of any woman that's ever run the Indy 500, and she has 9 starts in that race, but only a best finish of 17th. And then Milka Duno, your favorite, Dano. She best finished in 19th. She's run the race three times. And some other names I'd forgotten. Anna Beatriz. She's run the race four times, 2010 to 2013. Simona Di Silvestro ran it five times, scattered between 2010 and 15. And we've also had Pippa Mann, who failed to qualify this year, but she's run it six times, and Catherine Legg, who's run it a couple times. So I didn't know that there was that many women that had actually run that race. There's more women that have run an Indy, really, and had success than there are in NASCAR.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I got to thinking about that over the weekend, how many had run, and, meeting Lynn St. James, what a class act she was.
Absolutely.
And really a great driver. And I think she was she the first Indy rookie female driver?
I don't know.
But I believe that to be the case, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she was first female rookie driver at Indy. So there's a lot of history, yes, and I'm proud of all of these women that have competed and been able to have good runs, because Doug, think about it, you know, it's a whole lot better than me. I've failed to run Indy, so a lot better than me for sure, but to each his own. Everybody kind of has the opportunity, and glad these people have had the opportunity and the wherewithal to get to where they are today.
A couple more pieces about the Indy 500, and I definitely agree with you, Dan. And it'll be interesting to see who the next prominent female drivers are, because there aren't any in NASCAR right now that are doing very much.
Yep, and that's the deal right there, is knowing this and knowing the women that's competed at Indy as well as NASCAR and other series. When are we going to see more come in? What's the reason that we haven't seen more women come into the sport, knowing what we know?
One thing I'll say, and I hope this doesn't ruffle too many feathers. It's not, because I think that women are just as capable to drive as men. There's just something to say. It's just like, why aren't there that many African American drivers and this nationality and that? Look, the main people that have always been into racing in America have always been white men. That's just a fact. You just can't get around. Like, that's just something that appeals more. It's not nothing natural. It's kind of how it is. It's cultural. It's not a glass ceiling. I think
it's more area and what you were exposed to growing up and so forth. I told somebody at one time, they were talking about racing discriminates against everybody else,
and
I'd say the only thing that discriminates in racing is lack of money.
Because
it is an expensive sport, and unless you have access to someone who has money or the wherewithal to put you in a ride, or the opportunity is presented to you, it's a tough sport to get into, just because you know, in baseball, you need a ball and a bat and a glove. And in football, you need the pigskin. So, you know, there isn't anything in racing that is cheap.
No, not at all. And it's just a matter of who's into what. I mean, it really is that, too. So those are great points. And another thing I want to point out about Indy as we move from that, willpower in Victory Lane, to me, was worth watching the whole race. Seeing him, he looked like he got bit by something. He was rabidly excited.
You know,
seeing
I can do everything, Holly, Doug, in Victory Lane except the milk. I could not do the milk.
And he doesn't drink milk. He kind of faked the milk. He poured it in his mouth and sort of spit it out and let it just run all over his body because he doesn't drink milk.
Yeah, but I couldn't pour it all over me like he did that deal. That deal there, that would sour, and I'm like, oh, what did I just do?
Yeah, and I heard Alexander Rossi 2 years ago. I was listening to this on Jeff Gluck's podcast. He actually asked Alexander Rossi about how he'd preserved his wreath from Victory Lane. And Rossi wanted, as, I don't know if he was a rookie, but he wanted as a brand new kind of unknown driver 2 years ago, which was really exciting. And Rossi actually preserved the whole wreath. And they were, Jeff Gluck was talking about with the guy that runs the NASCAR Chasm account on that podcast, wait, if you preserve it, like, what happens to that milk that's on there? Does it curdle under the preserve? Do they clean it off?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some bit stuff. But Will Power in Victory Lane, seeing him just, I mean, screaming for joy. I mean, he couldn't even, it's almost, he just wanted to jump out of his skin. And his wife, Holly, of course, was just, I've never seen somebody that excited. Yeah. I was going like, okay, Holly, chill out. You know, Will, we're on the race. Okay, we're good. You made it. But I've never seen someone that excited. We're going to Disneyland.
I've
never seen someone that excited to win before. I really
Yeah, but don't you just love the passion? And that's what's missing in a lot of this is don't you just love the passion?
Exactly. And so no matter how boring it was in some parts, and the Indy 500 was the most exciting of the three races, and we'll mention the other two in a minute. No matter how boring it was to me in some parts, seeing that exultation there in Victory Lane was worth sitting there for 3 or 4 hours and watching 500 miles of racing at Indy, because Will Power has done everything in his IndyCar career except win that race, and that was it for him. Another thing, too, about that race is seeing the drivers so much on edge out there, spinning out, wrecking a lot. There were a lot of breaks in the action, and that was probably the saving grace for some of the fuel mileage that came up, and also for just the fact that they got bunched up, at least on restarts. But another thing, too, Dan, I just want to point out again, a lot of people, when they comment about this race, they talk about Will Power winning, they talk about Danica's last race, and they talk about Alexander Rossi going sometimes four wide on restarts and just hanging it out there.
He did, and he really amazed me in what he could do in the car and how confident and how smooth he was in that car. I really thought he would be the one that in the end would be one of the three or four or five that would be there to compete for the win.
That was disappointed that I didn't see him come up and do that. I was expecting that also. And so
but it's not the last you'll see of him. I know that.
Not at all. And again, he won it 2 years ago. So the top 10 in the Indy 500 were Will Power, Ed Carpenter, who started on the pole and probably had the best car for most of the race there. He actually led 65 laps to Will Power's 59. Scott Dixon had a low-key third-place finish. He hung in there. Alexander Rossi was fourth. Ryan Hunter-Reay came back from pit road, loose wheel or something. I think he had to make an extra pit stop for a puncture. He was fifth. Sixth place was the Penske car, Simon Pagenaud. Carlos Munoz in a one-off race for Andretti Autosport was seventh. Eighth was Joseph Newgarden, who is the face of IndyCar right now, the reigning champion. He was not much of a factor. I was surprised Sunday. Ninth goes to the young driver, Robert Wickens from Canada, and he's someone that they've talked about a lot this year. And then Graham Rahal finished 10th. So Danica Patrick, by the way, because we need to mention that, right? Danica Patrick's final race, it ended on lap 67, and she finished in the 30th spot after that wreck there. So she was very emotional, Dan, afterwards. Usually she blabbers on in an interview. She'll talk for a long time. She was.
Yeah, but I think this is one of those deals where I fully expected her to jump out of the car and be like Helio was. I need a redo. Give me one more Indy. I need a do-over.
Yeah, and let's explain. Elio Castroneves, when he got interviewed, he said, Roger Penske told him if he won the race, he'd let him win it again next year, run it again. And so he goes, Roger, give me one more chance, you know?
Yeah, sitting there in a wadded-up race car, give me one more chance.
Yeah, well, Elio is one of the greatest in the sport of all time. Another popular win, Daniel Ricciardo in the F1 Grand Prix of Monaco, but he literally led every lap, won by 7 seconds. The second-place finisher, Sebastian Vettel, was 10 seconds ahead of Lewis Hamilton, and then the field was a little more close together after that. There were only 13 cars that finished on the lead lap in a huge race course like that. So at Monaco, drivers were starting to call for changes, actually, in the course, and they have to get it run by Prince Albert of Monaco because they've been racing that same configuration for decades. So I thought that was interesting because to me that seems like a lot of F1 races are like that. But
you know, Doug, it was definitely an interesting weekend for racing, and then you go into the 600, and as I told you when we were talking earlier, I think the 600 needs to be sponsored by Sleep Number or Mattress Firm.
It started at, 6:20 or so, and it was, I mean, I'll admit, look, well, this podcast airs on PRN's network, on GoPRN.com, which is part of SMI, which owns Charlotte Motor Speedway, and I love Charlotte Motor Speedway. But I was fighting to stay awake through that race after having watched racing all day. It was all Kyle Busch.
Yeah, maybe it needs to be sponsored by a coffee company.
There you go, yeah. Get the Keurig 600. Although Coca-Cola has caffeine in it. Maybe I should have had an ice-cold Coca-Cola, huh?
Maybe I should have had a six-pack.
Oh, yeah.
Of Coca-Cola.
Of Coca-Cola, yes, yes.
Yep.
So, Kyle Busch, and I just see this season breaking down, and I know it's boring sometimes because people
Captain
dominate.
Captain Herb, don't you just love it? Captain Herb, the hair on his head would have been standing up. And
I can't believe.
I can hear him, Kyle the Pile.
I can't believe
now.
That on a day
where we remember veterans. Kyle Busch drove a Toyota to victory lane.
That's pretty much what it would be like, Kyle the Pie. But Kyle Busch is starting to get more popular. He's starting to get more cheers. He still gets a lot of boos. He's still very polarizing. But he's
one thing for sure, whether you like him or whether you don't, you have to admire the fact of what he can do in a race car.
Absolutely.
You really got to admire him for what he can do. And it's just like we said about Dale Earnhardt Sr., not comparing the two, but it's the fact that Kyle backs up what he does as well as what Dale Sr. backed up what he did.
Certainly. And Dale Sr. ended up being wildly popular by the end of it all. And I don't know that Kyle Busch will reach those heights. But I don't either.
But you've got to admire him for what he's been able to put together and what he's been able to do. Because once he left Hendrick, I thought that deal was pretty much done at that point in time.
Really?
And, he's really handed it back to everyone who thought his career was, for the most part, peaked at that time.
So let's rewind the clock. That was back in 2007 when the announcement was made. 2007 was Kyle Busch's last full year in the number 5 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet. Kyle Busch goes and replaces J.J. Yaley in a number 18 car at Joe Gibbs Racing that had struggled mightily for the last 3 or 4 years. Bobby Labonte's last couple of years driving the 18 were not like what it was when he won his championship. And then J.J. Yaley came in and really, really struggled, just was not experienced enough. Joe Gibbs had 2 rookie drivers in the same year, Yaley and Hamlin in 2006. And Hamlin went up, Yaley went down. That's just how it worked. So Kyle Busch was going from Hendrick Motorsports to a very questionable number 18 team. And he won 8 races in 2008 with a big old middle finger out the window. I mean, that's just what it was. I highly encourage everybody listening to go to goprn.com or iTunes and subscribe to the Fast Talk that podcast. It's actually a show that airs on the radio, too, that's been hosted for years by Doug Rice. And he does a wonderful interview in studio with Kyle Busch after the Coca-Cola 600 that is just very telling. And it's very eye-opening to how much determination he has and how maybe you'll get a different view of Kyle Busch after hearing that. One thing that Kyle says in the interview is, because Doug Rice said, you just won the Coke 600. It's your first ever points-paying Cup Series win at Charlotte. He has now won at every track on the circuit. He's like, do you soak up a thing like this where you've dominated? And he goes, honestly, I don't even remember Victory Lane. And this was just 2 hours after the race. He's like, I was so determined, so focused driving that race car that when I got to Victory Lane, it was just going through the motions. I don't even remember it.
Yeah, but Doug, this is where we talk about attrition in races in history past.
Yes.
Okay, the drivers have a lot more conveniences that the drivers of decades ago didn't have. Cars are probably over the course of 600 miles a lot more friendly to the driver, friendly, I would say, as far as being able to the power steering and other things that you have. And you know, I thought about that as the race started and went on and how Kyle was – from lap one, everybody competes like it's the last lap.
Yes.
You know, everybody was wide open from lap one, and not just Cal, but in years past, everybody would, for the most part, pace themselves because they knew if one driver got out and got out early and stretched out, that number one, fatigue would either set in or attrition, that the car would not make it the full length of the race. So it was pace yourself in the earlier years, where now you go out and run 600 miles just wide open and as hard as you can run. And is the 600, has it outlived its time in history here?
Well, and we talked about it last week. Maybe it should be a shorter race. It would be nice if there was a way to make the cars less durable.
Do you run 1,000 laps or 1,000 miles instead of 600 miles? Do you try to stretch it to where attrition and fatigue does take its toll do you do that? I don't know.
Brad Keselowski said one time, I think in one of Jeff Gluck's 12 questions interviews, Jeff, pay me some money, bro. I mentioned you twice today. Pay me some money, jeffgluck.com. Okay, back to me. but Jeff Gluck, I think it was in a 12 questions interview where he asked, how many laps do you think it could you run where before you would actually wear out in a race? And Brad Keselowski said it would probably have to be at least 1,000 laps, just like you said. You hit it on the head. But he said maybe a 1,000-lap race. By the time I got to the end of that, both myself and the car would be to the point where it would be hard to compete.
Well, you know, we both saw Greg Biffle at Gresham. They came over there, and they worked on two cars, I believe, all day long, and he probably ran 1,000 or 1,200 laps.
No kidding. I was not there for that. Greg Biffle ran 1,200 laps in a one-day test at Gresham.
And they ran all day long. They just did not quit all day long between two cars. They would work on one. He would get out of one, get in the other one. They'd work on it while he was running. And they went through five front-end assemblies trying to sort out which one they thought was the best or the best setup for short track. And they ran between 1,000 and 1,200 laps, and it was just remarkable, and got out and looked like he could probably run another 1,200.
Things have changed, and that's why, like you said, maybe working on the length of the race is something they could do. Honestly, before they talk about the length of the race, they need to work on this package, all right? And it just does not work at Charlotte. They put track bite in the upper groove. It was still hard to pass. Kyle Busch was lapping into the top 10 by the end of Stage 4. I actually thought the first three stages of the Coke 600 were okay. Because there were enough cautions, they kept bunching them up. Kyle Busch would drive off on the restarts, but there were a lot of comers and goers. You would see Kurt Busch show up in the top five. Where's he been all night? You know, and he just kind of chipped away at it. Then he had a good pit stop, and then they'd have a restart. Boom. But at the end, it just, I mean, spread out large. And so they have got to work on this package. I don't know that the restrictor plate extended splitter, front air ducts, high spoiler packages,
the
one or
that
not.
Deal. The fans loved it because it grouped everybody up. But
and the All-Star race is totally different.
You got to wonder how many cars you're going to tire up in that deal, too.
Yeah, is it pure racing? It comes to this tension here, and I don't want to spend forever on this, Dan, but are we doing pure racing, or are we trying to do racing entertainment?
I think we left pure racing a long time ago.
Right. Well, and then in that case, then maybe then you start going for that plate package deal. All right, so one quick little pivot here. I want to talk about a streak of Kevin Harvick's that ended on Sunday night. Dan, do you have any guesses?
No, I don't. I know we talked about this, but if I could do a graph, if I could do one of the chart graphs, it would probably look like Mount Everest on the top side, and then on the bottom side, what's the deepest valley in the world?
The Mariana Trench. That's the lowest point in the world. Yeah. So Kevin Harvick on lap 83, he had to start about 37th of the race. He started toward the back. And Kevin Harvick cut a tire on lap 83. He had driven up to fourth place in just that short amount of time. Talk about difference in generations, right? And he cut a left front tire, pounded the wall, and finished in 40th place. Kevin Harvick had never, and this is, by the way, from Brock Beard, who runs a website, lastcar.info. Just search last car, and he always writes about the last place finishers in each race. It's a great website. Kevin Harvick's first last place finish of his Cup career, Xfinity career, and truck career combined. He has never finished last, and this goes all the way back to his first ever truck race in 1995. Think about that. Never finished last.
Well, as we said, this season's going to have a lot of firsts, and it ain't over yet.
Now, I will give a caveat. Harvick has finished last in the Sprint Unlimited, which is what used to be the Bud Shootout, and he finished last in the All-Star race in 2001, but never in a points-paying race.
That's pretty incredible.
It is pretty incredible. Some of that's luck, but it shows how consistent Harvick is. He's not an erratic driver. He is somebody that keeps his car together, usually gets up there and runs up front. Even in the years where he wasn't having a lot of success at Childress, he finished races. And he had a long time no DNF streak, too. He and Clint Boyer both back in the mid-late 2000s, last decade.
Yeah, but does this also play into the deal where NASCAR is you got a 5-minute rule, and if you don't run so fast, you fix a car and you're limited on what you can and can't fix, I guess. So there's a lot of things that's changed over the decades that you have to factor in. But in the modern racing, and that's what you got to look at.
I think in modern racing, this
is the way it is.
Absolutely. Well, the crash clock, which is 6 minutes, definitely plays into that, because they would have come out and tried to race, but really you don't even need the points once you're in the playoffs. So that's the other thing, too.
Yeah, because one of the races, Cale blew up, and they changed an engine in less than 15 minutes and got him back out and running again. Okay, so
NASCAR got rid of that. NASCAR got rid of that. So that being said, we talk about points. This might be a season, Dano, that – we might only have a few winners, and that points might really matter for a lot of drivers, because 16 drivers make the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series playoffs, and we are now halfway through the regular season. The regular season is 26 races, and we've now completed 13 points races. Your points leader is Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch is your points leader. I'm trying to see what differential is. 67 points is what he leads Joey Logano by. Would you believe Kevin Harvick, for all the talk, is only third in points?
Yeah, I would believe it.
He's got 5 wins, 9 top fives, 10 top tens. Average finish at 10.3, though, because he's had 3 races where he's wrecked. Kevin Harvick is third in points. Brad Keselowski, fourth. Martin Truex Jr. only in fifth. Remember, he was up high last year. Sixth is Kurt Busch. Seventh, Denny Hamlin. Eighth, Clint Bowyer. Ninth, Kyle Larson. And 10th is Eric Almirola. And then the drivers 11th through 16th that would – 11th through 15th that would make the playoffs, because Austin Dillon is actually sitting there and 19th in points, but he won the Daytona 500. So the other 5 or 6 drivers that would make it: Ryan Blaney, Jimmy Johnson, Eric Jones, Alex Bowman, and Chase Elliott. And actually, Chase Elliott is tied with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. for 15th in points, but Chase has better finishes, therefore you got it. So, okay, so we look at the points right now, Dan. And we look at where we are halfway through this regular season. What are some surprises? We've already done this, drivers that have been really good and drivers that have been disappointing, but now we have a lot more races under our belt. What stands out to you?
You know, I think the only thing to me that stands out so far is the fact that Hendrick has not been able to put it together for all the teams.
Yeah.
They have struggled. Whatever is going on in that organization has struggled. And I still say that we will see that change before your playoffs at the end of the year, obviously. And I think that nothing else surprises me this year, because I think everybody is saving. Since you don't go home, you know, the charters, you don't go home, and you just got to be in the points, as you say, for the playoffs at the end. And I think that's what everybody that has not won a race is obviously doing.
Well, and certainly. And look just outside of the playoff bracket. So Ricky Stenhouse is tied with Chase Elliott in 15th in points, but technically Stenhouse, I believe, would be out as far as tiebreakers go. Paul Menard had been up there in the top 10 a while. He's 17th. Daniel Suarez. Jamie McMurray only 20th in points. And a sizable margin back from the cutoff spot, Ryan Newman. And then here we go. Here we get down to the drivers, the very last ones that really are with full-time, big-budget teams. I mean, there are a lot of full-time teams, but the ones that are with the marquee teams. How about the Rookie of the Year race being separated by 2 points? William Byron is only 22nd in the standings. Bubba Wallace is 23rd on a much smaller, trimmed-down Richard Petty Motorsports team, and they are only 2 points apart. I wouldn't have guessed that one. I wouldn't have put money on that.
No, I wouldn't have put money on that.
They're
but
both rookies.
This whole season has been, needless to say, strange at the least.
It has. Some other drivers, just looking down the list here. A.J. Allmendinger's another bad season. He's 24th in points. David Ragan. It probably has run better than 25th in the standings where he sits, but that's where he is. He's had a couple bad races, but he does have a top 10. Casey Kane really hasn't brought any vinegar or fire to that number 95 team when he replaced Michael McDowell, and he's 26th. And Chris Buescher is 27th. Just a lone top 5 finish is really all to write home about. And then you get down here, Michael McDowell. Here's one that's just really disappointing to me. The second-to-last driver, or third-to-last driver that's run all the races, Ty Dillon with Germain Racing, second full year in there, and they have been absent. To average finish, a 25th, only 29th in points.
You know, Doug, with all this being said, how come we haven't gotten a hint of silly season starting of people maybe not exactly thrilled about where they are sitting. And I'm talking about owners and drivers. And when do we see people starting to get restless?
Well, the first part of that was Matt Kenseth jumping in with Trevor Bayne. Trevor's now missed two races.
But we know that that deal was pretty much, you know, to worry that you needed a veteran in to kind of sort things out. I can see that one better than I can the ones that are just really getting restless about what's going on.
Sure.
And making a drastic move.
Well, let's explore that for a minute then. So as we talk about silly season here, okay. So where is a driver? I'll just ask you straight up, Dan. Where is a place that you think an owner right now would be getting restless with their driver?
Well, you and I both know that the sponsorship deal is crucial to all of this. So you've got a sponsor that's nervous anyway, or you've got a sponsor that is looking for results, and that's what everybody's looking for, obviously. So if I'm an owner, I'm sitting there through the whole thing trying to map my moves. I'm like Earnhardt Sr. was at Daytona, trying to map my moves of where I want to be at the finish of the race. So I'm trying to map the best alternative here to get me somebody that can get me some results no matter what I got to do.
We know that Kurt Busch, and I totally agree that it's about the sponsor. We know that Kurt Busch had to take a bit, we assume anyway, take a bit of a pay cut, had to wait late into the last season before he knew that he was going to be back in the number 41 car. And so Kurt is somebody who's on a one-year contract. That could come up at any point. You've got Cole Custer in the wings at Stewart Haas.
And we
racing.
Know that there are probably going to be more one-year contracts
based
on the way things are going.
Absolutely.
And where racing is today, we're going to see more and more pressure applied to the owners and the drivers because we see the grandstands.
Oh,
and
sure.
There reflects where we are today.
Well, certainly. And so his teammates, Kurt's teammates, Clint Bowyer and Eric Almirola, I thought would be in pretty much statement. Even though Eric Almirola brought sponsorship and this is his first year in the 10 car replacing Danica Patrick, I thought that Eric Almirola would be in a position where if he didn't show up this year, he would be on thin ice, a short leash, if you will. He's got 5 top 10s and his 10th in points, almost won the Daytona 500, and I think he's capable of winning a race later on if the cards fall right. And Clint Bowyer was absent last season. He did have some consistency. This year he's got a win, 3 top 5s, 7 top 10s, average finish a 10th. That's pretty good. And he's sitting there 8th in points, locked into the playoffs. They're
but
safe.
You can't always rely on the fact that the card's falling right.
Right.
It's like
and Clint Bowyer doesn't have a ton of sponsorship. Just to
yep.
Yeah.
Yep. You've got to make it happen, just like Kyle is doing. Whatever you got to do, you got to make it happen.
Right. Some other drivers that maybe we could circle. But see, it's tough. Like Paul Menard, you'd say. But no, he's got the Menard sponsorship. Austin Dillon, you know, doesn't have a ton of results. Well, he ain't leaving the 3 car. We know why, right? He's going to be in the 3 car.
Yeah, but at some point in time, you kind of going to have to draw the line even on that one because I know Childress well enough to know that they want results everybody else.
But their whole team has struggled too. The 3, the 31, and their satellite team, the 13 with Ty Dillon. They're all struggling right now.
But
so it's
just
something
like
that
bringing Kenseth in, you're going to have to try something. You're going to have to go out of the box to try to make something work. You can't keep trying to drive a square peg in a round hole.
And what's interesting with Kenseth returning to Roush Fenway Racing, Kenseth is saying the exact same complaints that Ricky Stenhouse and Trevor Bayne have been saying about those cars too. So it's kind of validates what's going on. I won't say anything about Suarez yet. I think Suarez is just in a sophomore slump. He does have 4 top 10s this year. Here's two, though, that I think you could definitely circle when you look at drivers waiting in the wings. Jamie McMurray, the one car we've already talked about on this podcast several weeks ago. I feel like, although he had a great Coke 600, Jamie McMurray has not run well. He's not run anywhere close to as well as Kyle Larson. Part of that is maybe the new Camaro. And Ryan Newman, same thing. New Camaro, not had a lot of results, only 3 top 10s, sitting there 21st in points.
Yeah, a lot of things to consider here, Dougie.
Yeah, and I look at the Xfinity Series. Tyler Reddick, man. Tyler Reddick won Daytona. He's got up there, run up front. He's a Chevy driver that's waiting in the wings. Does Tyler Reddick end up getting the phone call one day from Childress or from Ganassi saying, hey, come on, man. Well, could you imagine actually Chip Ganassi calling Tyler? And this is not a rumor. I'm just speculating here. There's no rumors that validate this. Could you imagine Chip Ganassi picking up the phone, calling Tyler Reddick, another dirt driver, another little guy, a little dirt driver, just like Kyle Larson, say, come on over and drive this one car.
Yeah,
that'd be wild to see those guys riding the rail each week.
Possibilities are good.
Yeah. So just throwing these things out there. I think A.J. Allmendinger is another one that JTG Daugherty Racing has got to look at and say, who can we get in this car? But then the question becomes, who could you get? Who is somebody that's in a lower series right now that's primed and ready to go?
Well, could be one of those deals, Doug, where we've talked about it, where you bring me a sponsorship with enough money and you can drive for the year.
Well, that could be it. And that's interesting. And then I look at Chris Buescher, and I always like to harken back to him because Chris Buescher's a really good driver, and he's driving for a mid-level team. And I wonder if Chris Buescher is looking up and saying, are there any places that are going to open? Maybe if I'm Richard Childress, I say, I wonder if Chris Buescher could drive this 31. But probably not better than Ryan Newman. So it's tough. It may be a lateral move. A lot of things to explore and consider there.
There's a lot of drivers that you and I both know are probably going to filter out here in the next year or two.
Yep.
And the veteran drivers that probably were the Gillette Young Guns at one time, but are going to filter out, and new blood's coming in.
Well, certainly. Look at Jimmy Johnson. If he's down to his last 3 to 5 years, maybe. I mean, that's probably a lot, but let's just say it's 3 to 5. Who's waiting in the wings there? You know, and we don't know because there's a new 18-year-old that's showing up every year. I want to give a quick shout-out, by the way, to Kaz Grala, who drove for JGL Racing up until 2 weeks ago, and then suddenly they decided to shut down Kaz's number 24 team. Well, Tony Urey Jr. and Kaz Grala's father own Fury Race Cars, and they field a lot of late models, and they have put together on a dime. They pretty much took that 24 team, 10 of the people from the team, some of the cars, some of the same sponsors, pieced it all together, and went out and ran. I think it was the number 61, and they actually got a top 10 finish in the Xfinity race on Saturday. And that's the kind of racing stories that I like to hear, is people that throw a team together at the last second, even though it's kind of the same team as before, and then they have some success. That's throwback, man.
Yeah. You got that right. And I've seen those Fury cars. You were talking about that. And those Fury cars are nice cars. And if you're serious about going and playing somewhere like Road Atlanta or Virginia or some places, road courses, and you want to go play, man, you need to look at one of those.
Really? Okay. I thought they would be more of a pavement, late model type deal. That's what I was thinking Tony Urey Jr., but you're saying they do road course cars too, huh?
They do road course cars where if you just want to buy one and go play, and they're about $100,000, which ain't cheap, but if you factor in the deal of what it costs you even to put together an old cup car and go play, it's expensive.
Sure.
And I think they pretty much guarantee these things for 1,000 laps if you don't wrap it around the guardrail, then you can go play, and when you factor in the cost per lap, which you need to do, then that's pretty inexpensive to go play.
It sounds good. Dano, should we do this?
I would love to go. I just got to come up with $100,000.
Well, we'll go find Eric Von Hessler's not
maybe
here.
Maybe we just need to go to Tony and say we need some sponsorship.
We just need to shake Eric Von Hessler. He's a big time talk show host. He's not with us today. If those are tuning in midstream, he's out on vacation. So, but we need to shake Eric Von Hessler down for a cool 50, and then that gets us half the way there. I know, I sure as heck don't have him in his career,
so he'll be good for the other 100 next year.
All right. Hey, any parting shots here before we put a rest of 5 to go?
You know, we keep talking about the season and where it's going and how unsure it is. And one thing for sure, it was definitely a good weekend for racing. Got to see a good bit of racing. Wish it had been a little bit more exciting. But we know that the races coming up will be, and the packages, you know, we talk about the packages that they could do to make it better. And I just wish they would put some of this stuff kind of on the fast track and turn some stuff around a little bit quicker than we're seeing. And question is, have you heard any more news on Goldman Sachs got anybody that's going to buy a NASCAR yet?
There hasn't been any more news in that story, but there have been a lot of non-denials from NASCAR. So you know that something is stirring up there. And it'll be, of course, like we've said probably 100 times today, interesting to see what turns out. Hey, you mentioned about packages and when things change. And I think that's what you're kind of getting with, is if somebody else is a major player in NASCAR or buys the whole thing, could some of that stuff happen quicker? And NASCAR lately, in the last, I'd say, 5 years, been very responsive to problems in the sport suddenly. Now, there may still be systemic problems that they're not really rooting out, and they're trying to trim around the hedges instead of really get to the root cause. That could be the case, and maybe new ownership would do that. But with this all-star package, one of the big holdups with trying to move fast is that they have this charter system, this agreement with the owners, and they know that the owners kind of have a veto power if it's going to cost them so much money up front to even put it together. So that's the complication with it. I think NASCAR sees the fans' responses, and they know, wow, we need to get this thing out to Michigan. We're going to be at Pocono this weekend. Pocono would probably be a great race to run that, although I don't know how that would work in that tunnel term. But Pocono might be a great race to run a package like that because the cars get so spread out. Michigan might be a great race. Maybe some of the other mile and a half, so I certainly wouldn't say Atlanta, but definitely like we saw at Charlotte. Those could be places where you could really spice it up. Oh, I've got one more, Dano. How about the Brickyard 400, which is now going to be the last race before the playoffs begin? Having that package there, they ran well in the Xfinity Series. They didn't tear up a ton of cars, but there were a lot of lead changes. That could be one that I would circle. I'd tell the owners right now, look, the race right before the playoffs is the Brickyard 400. You've got 2 months now to plan for that, or 3 months, whatever it is. Go for it. That's the one.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Let's do something. Let's put some stuff on the Feist track and see what we can come up with, because surely with all the brains that are out there that run these organizations and run these teams, they could put something together that would make it a lot more exciting. But still, you know, you go back to the fact that obviously they like it, because not a lot of changes are getting done.
Well, it all takes time. What I didn't want to see after the All-Star race, and we touched on this a bit last week, is an overreaction. Yeah, it was plate racing, but it was short race that was divided up into small segments with less cars. I don't know. You don't want to see an overreaction or an overcorrection either. So I'm glad that they're being judicious.
Oh, come on. Let's see something different. Let's get off this same old.
It's a tough tension. Pure racing versus entertainment. And I think, like you said, we moved from pure racing a long time ago. Don't want to overcorrect
right.
for that. So as Kyle Busch said, that kind of stuff is not what I signed up for, this being random who wins. But it wasn't random. Kevin Harvick won, okay? So anyway, well, Dano, thanks for joining today. I know you got an appointment later on you need to get to, but I really appreciate it. And hopefully all three of us will be back as one happy family next week, okay?
Sounds like a deal. Hope everybody has an awesome week. And Eric, I hope you're having a good time. And remember, sponsorship, we need the money.
Yeah, there you go. Eric Von, the Von Hessler Doctrine Chevrolet, running at Road Atlanta Fury Race Cars with all three of us sharing the driving duties and Dano teaching us how to build it. That sounds good to me. So
that's exactly right. We'll get the gear ratio we need for that place.
There you go. Well, Pocono's up next for the Cup Series, and we probably won't talk as much about Indy being in Detroit or wherever F1's going to be. This is a big weekend, and it could have done more, but definitely three wins that you can respect. And so we'll go on to this next week with that in our minds. So for Dano Elliott from Dawsonville, I'm Doug Fireball Turnbull from the WSB Traffic Team here in Atlanta, and, of course, fill-in pit reporter for PRN. And we will talk to you next week on 5-2-GO.